Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games, Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games, Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I am your host, Jay Larson, and we're going to say that I'm doing dramatic pauses to be dramatic, not because I'm absent-minded, and granted, the pauses will be taken out by the filter anyway, but I am your host, Jay Larson, and joining me, as always, is your friendly neighborhood,
Greg Webster.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Jay.
How are you doing?
I am doing well. I just had a game with Magneto earlier tonight.
Nice.
And I'm almost done with The Good Place. And
nice.
Yeah. Have you watched it?
No.
Okay.
I've been watching The Leftovers.
Okay. I've heard that's really good.
Part of the reason why I watched it is because I looked at like this like list of, granted, like, there's no reason to give this particular listicle any credence, but I read this list that they said what they thought were the top 25 HBO shows of all time, mm-hmm. and The Leftovers they rated as number 3, and so I was like, okay, well, let's give it a go. I also decided to give it a go because it's made by the same person who did Watchmen, and so obviously I love that and was curious to watch a little bit of his earlier work. So
yeah, that's awesome. Now is this isn't related to the Left Behind book series, right?
I know it's based off of a book. I don't know if it's I thought it was maybe the Leftovers book as well. I don't know. I thought that Left Behind was maybe like kind of a Christian-y book series, mm-hmm. but I don't know.
Yes, Left Behind, I believe, is very Christian-y. Is this Christian-y?
Didn't they do like a, I'm not sure if it was TV or movie adaptation of it that had like one of the family ties or something, an 80s actor in it?
There are 4 Left Behind films.
Yes.
And then a reboot. No, there are 3, and then they made a reboot starring Nicolas Cage.
Reboot. That's amazing. I have to look this up real quick because it's driving me a little bit crazy.
There was also like a PC game, I remember, that people said was pretty good. Like, they're like, it's Kirk Cameron.
Was like the main star of the old ones. And he was in, anyways, he was in an 80s show. So, Growing Pains.
Gotcha.
So, anyways, it's post-Christmas. Did you evidently survive Christmas?
I survived, yeah. I mean, for me, it was just my kids getting like drowned in presents from my family, which it's sweet. And my partner and I have basically like told the family, like, slow the fuck down. And this is now the second year in a row where it's funny, right? It's imagine if every person buys two children one present each, like, you still end up with like 30 new presents that you have to figure out how to deal with. And so it's interesting, and I kind of
love seeing pictures of my friends' like Christmas tree and like their stacks and stacks of gifts, because
it's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I'm just like, holy cow, that is so many presents.
If you're not careful, the presents will get covered in garbage as you go, and you don't know. You're like, surprise gift, it's under all this trash. Like, But
yeah, I didn't even wrap anything.
Yeah, that sounds lovely, Jay. I want that in my life. But you know, and so I have a 3-year-old and a 1.5-year-old, and like the 3-year-old gets it, and she's like, Santa brought me these presents, and you know, ooh, Santa, and it's so adorable and sweet, and then my 1.5-year-old has no idea what's going on, and like it's I don't know, it was fun. And I my friends will know this, but I'm I got a toaster that looks like R2-D2, and it's really funny because I am gluten insensitive, so like I don't really push myself to eat toast ever or bread, and I avoid it, and so it was really funny. But I sent you pictures of it, and I was like, this is the funniest gift that I can never use. But my mom bought it for me, and then she realized what she did. So she didn't even bother wrapping it. She just gave me the gift receipt and the toaster. And I took it to the Williams Sonoma store where she got it. And the Baby Yoda Instant Pots were only $20 more than the toaster. Yes. So I now have a Baby Yoda Instant Pot, and it's amazing.
My funny story about a gift for my parents was my mom gave me a shirt, and it's like literally 2 or 3 sizes too small. And I'm just like, oh, Mom, I love your unbridled optimism, but like it's going to take a whole lot of work to get to the place where I can wear that. So
yeah, no, I totally understand. In the last, so I when I was in college, I dropped about 30 pounds, and I've received badly fitting clothes basically ever since. And like now I've fatted back up to like where I used to be, in high school basically, and I still like it's funny. It's just yeah. But receiving a shirt that's like significantly too large or too small is, you're also like, oh, great, thank you.
Yeah, it'll.
I would love to wear this one day.
We, this actually ties into, well, with a topic that I'm gonna ask you, but it is, I guess, always kind of. They always end up setting like these New Year's goals, etc. And I do feel somewhat hopeful that we will succeed on some of ours this year, because part of it is that Brian's actually, so you probably don't know this. You don't really know Brian that well, or didn't know him for all that long. But when I first met him, he was pretty skinny. But he lived off of Diet Coke and cigarettes, and
breakfast
he,
champions.
Yeah, right. Yeah, good way to lose weight. And so he quit. He quit smoking. He quit Diet Coke. And part of the way that he managed to do it was told himself that, you know, I can't have a cigarette, but I can have a piece of cake, or I can eat something or whatever, right? And so he gained a lot of weight, and he was up probably above 300 pounds. And then he just has like a really strong willpower. And so once he felt like he had finally kicked the habit with the smoking, and after he gained the weight, he's like, okay, I'm going to get back in shape. And he worked really hard, and, you know, he probably lost 125 pounds. He started doing half marathons, etc. And he's gained back on a bunch of weight because of the pandemic, and because he's had a lot of health problems, and because we've been doing way too much stress eating, but we're planning on you know, trying to buckle down as the new year comes around. So, and I feel pretty good that we'll do it, just because he's got a stronger willpower than I do. Mm-hmm. But awesome, this is kind of the tie-in that I wanted to do. So here's a tweet that I wanted to read to you, and then get your response. I'm probably going to give my response in a different podcast, but I am curious on yours.
Okay.
Okay. So this was a tweet from Andrew Chen. He says, imagine your perfect day in 2021. What happens? Describe it. And then he says, parenthetically, a friend of mine suggested this exercise as opposed to setting New Year's resolutions, and that he thinks it's more memorable, less dry than goal setting. So what does your perfect day in 2021 look like?
I like this. Okay. My perfect day in 2021. I make a cup of coffee. I get tacos and bring them home. I take my kids out to the park and we play, and then we go home where I make like a healthy lunch that they actually eat instead of demanding hot dogs and goldfish. They go to bed, and while they're napping in the afternoon, I get to go to a game store and enjoy some drinks and some Marvel Crisis Protocol, probably. Then I go out somewhere nice for dinner with friends, and then I read myself to sleep.
Nice. That, the nice thing about the day you just described is that it doesn't sound too difficult to achieve.
I don't think it is. So I think
that's nice.
Yeah, it's like just a string of simple pleasures, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was gonna say that I wasn't gonna answer this, but I'm gonna do a runner up.
Okay.
Of one that it's not my top day, but one that would be close to the top of my list. So in this one, Greg and I are at Gen Con, and we do an event of Crisis Protocol, maybe like Vibranium Heist or something like that. And we have a lunch of food trucks that are parked outside the convention center. Then in the afternoon, we go into the vendor hall and spend some time walking through, seeing all the awesome booths and all the awesome stuff for sale. And then we go to dinner at Harriet and Izzy's, ooh, which is nearby the convention center. And then play a board game after dinner with friends. And then by that point, I will be tired and will sleep.
That sounds magical.
It does.
I really hope that can happen in 2021.
Yeah, that one's...
Is Gen Con canceled?
No. They've said that they're still on. They have delayed taking money for badges, but they're hopeful that it's going to happen. It is... I feel bad for, like, so Adepticon is generally, like, in March, right? And so at the end of March. So in 2020 with Adepticon, it was kind of like all you were hearing about the pandemic on the news, et cetera, right? And it was the convention that for ages everyone was like, is this going to happen or is this not going to happen? And then it felt like, you know, all the dominoes fell really quickly where everything went from semi-normal to like not normal at all, and it got canceled. But I'm sure that I guess I haven't been keeping up with Adepticon, but like I don't see any scenario where they're able to do that in March.
Yeah.
And so it sucks that they like hit the start of the pandemic, can't do their time next year, and it's probably just gonna like kind of derail them for 2 years. But
yeah,
Gen Con,
it looks like the Adepticon has confirmed dates for 2022, so they're looking ahead.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. Gen Con is in the start of August, which seems like I'm cautiously optimistic with it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. Idaho is supposed to Are their current time miner expectation is that the general population will probably be able to start getting the vaccine in May.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Toes yeah. crossed. All my body parts are crossed. My eyes are crossed.
Oh, my.
Oh, Jay, you go right there. Come on, Jay. Goodness gracious. I'm not Chris Pine. You can't just objectify me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Or wait, Chris Evans. Sorry.
Yeah, you're the one who sent me that.
Yes. Me, and you sent it back to me. That was the funniest part. Everybody, I sent Jay a funny meme or internet joke that was like, what was it? It was, you're not born gay, you're forced to be gay.
Yeah, no one chooses to be gay.
Just like when I was forced to be gay by Fantastic Four when I saw Chris Evans in a towel. And then a couple hours later, after I send it to Jay, he sends it back to me.
I meant to send it to someone else, but whatever. Whatever.
All right. Okay. We should talk about what we're talking about.
Real quick. Oh, okay. One more thing for the intro.
Okay.
Which this is probably going to be great feedback from people. They'll be like, cut down your effing intros. But so Greg and I have been in discussions on things we want to do to improve the podcast. And, you know, we're throwing around a bunch of different ideas. We feel like after a year of doing this, that we are, you know, a lot more comfortable with each other, comfortable with the game, et cetera. And want to try to make the best podcast that we can. And so we're kind of in a stage where we're re-evaluating things. And the reason why I bring it up is obviously feedback that the listeners provide is something that we would value a lot with that. And so we are definitely going to keep where we talk about characters in game and where we also have a comic book that we are focusing the storyline on with the character. But other than that, a lot of things are up in the air. And so if that is, we just want to hear from you. So, let us know.
Yeah. What do you guys like? Is there anything you don't like? If you have anything specific, feel free. Any sort of feedback is appreciated. Thanks.
Okay. Now that I've finally, I'm ready to shut up and we can start talking about Magneto.
Oh, okay, good. All right, everybody. So we're here. We are finally in mutant land. And so we're going to start with Magneto. So, we kind of talked about like which mutant to pick first, and Magneto is Jay's favorite. So we're starting with that. And I think that's a great starting point. So Magneto is a six threat character. He is a size 2. He's on a medium base. He is a short move, which is not great, but he's on a 50 millimeter base, so it's okay. He has 6 stamina on his healthy side, and then when he's injured, he has 8. So he's got a total of 14 stamina, so pretty good. He has 3 physical and 3 energy defense, and then he has 6 mystical defense, probably because of his fancy helmet keeps him from being mind controlled. He has 2 attacks. His builder attack is one of the best ones in the game. It's called Reverse Polarity. It's range 3. It's 6 dice. It has 0 cost. You gain power equal to the damage dealt. And it's the second part that I think makes it so good. It says if the target character is within 2 of this character, you may reroll any number of its attack dice. It's insane. If it's not, after the attacker is resolved, you push the target character short. So either you push them away or you get to reroll any of the attack dice. It being on a builder attack just makes it incredible. I think that's easily the best builder in the game. His next attack is Shrapnel Blast. And it's a little bit interesting, and I think we need to talk about his other rules for it to make sense. So one of his powers is called Master of Magnetism. It's a infinity symbol power, so it's always active. So it says during the power phase, if you basically create metal constructs, you can only have two, and if you have less than two, you place one within three of him, and it's a size two piece of terrain. They're the little magnetic-y things, and you gain one power for each metal construct in place. So Magneto will gain between will gain either two or three power when he gets power, based on how many metal construct terrain pieces are on the board. So the Shrapnel Blast is an area 2 attack that does 6 dice and it costs 5. But instead of being from Magneto, like a normal area 2, you can measure the area 2 from a metal construct terrain feature within 3 of him. So, and if you do it, it blows up the piece. So he can either do a Shrapnel Blast from his base or from this piece of terrain's base. And then it says after each attack is resolved, the target character is stunned. So, you know, you can, it's kind of a cool attack because you can do an area attack from far away with Magneto's, constructs. So that's pretty cool. If you have like, and the other cool thing is, right, normally you're blowing one up a turn and placing one. So if you see your opponent has three characters close together, you can put one in between them. And then you can Shrapnel Blast it and do, you know, you're like, oh, I paid 5 power, but I'm rolling 18 dice on these three characters. So that's pretty cool. Ties into Magneto's leadership, which is From the Ruins. And it says when a terrain feature is destroyed after the effect is resolved, you choose a number of ally characters equal to or less than the terrain feature size. Each chosen character gains one power, and a character may only gain one power as a result of this leadership ability per turn. I'm finding that generally when I'm playing Brotherhood of Mutants, everyone is gaining one power every turn from this leadership ability. It's very consistent, and it doesn't require it to be you destroying the terrain. So if my opponents throw something, I also get to, you know, I also get to do it. And it doesn't say throw, it's just destroyed. So Punisher or Mystique, if they blow up a piece of terrain, that also triggers it. So it's very easy to just get one extra power for everybody a turn. He has a really cool throw called Fatal Attraction that costs X. So basically he can pay 1-4 power to pay for it. And you can throw a terrain feature within 3 with a size equal to or less than the power spent, and you throw it long. And in addition, before using the superpower, you have to pay 1 for each time you already used the power. So this is the first throw you can use multiple times in a round or in a turn. And the cost is equal to the size of the terrain plus 1. For every time you've used it. So if you're throwing a bunch of size 2s, you pay 2 for the first one, then you pay 3 for the second one, then you pay 4 for the next one. So it's pretty cool, and it lets Magneto just chuck multiple pieces of terrain until he runs out of power, basically. So it's really cool. And I think it's awesome. So like for me, I really like throwing terrain before I attack and then trying to just generate more power for more throws. So it's pretty cool. His final superpower, other than flight, he has flight, whatever, but force projection, it costs 2. When he's targeted by an attack or needs to make a dodge roll, you can use this, and he uses his mystical defense to defend or dodge. Also, he cannot be pushed or thrown as a result of those special rules of the attacker collision. So he gets 6 defense instead of 3, and then he can't be moved. He's so good. he's so good. He's really good. So he's got a cool defensive ability where he can pay 2 to be defense 6 on a dodge or an attack. He's got throws, you know, basically for days. He gives a little bit of power to his team. His leadership ability is okay. I'm not sure one power for everybody is like amazing, but it's good, right? It's not bad. It's not like useless. Honestly, I think the worst thing on his card is probably his leadership. Like, and I still think it's a good leadership.
I mean, it's better than Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sure. It's definitely more consistent. There's one thing that bothers me about Magneto. Looking at his card. I don't think Shrapnel Blast is better than Reverse Polarity. I think what you want to do is you want to get within two of an opponent and you just want to hit them with Reverse Polarity once or twice and re-roll everything and then use the power you generate to throw terrain at other people. I just, like, Shrapnel Blast seems situational, and I'm not, I think you might sometimes use Shrapnel Blast, but most of the time I think getting those re-rolls is better. I might be wrong, but that's my like,
well, I mean, gut instinct. Part of it is, as well. I obviously, so Magneto's a lot of points, and so it's important to try to get as much work as possible out of him when you activate him, which means that trying to get a double attack with him is a lot of times something that's an important strategy to try to do. I mean, would you agree with me where I'm going so far?
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so, you know, there's going to be just sometimes where you're not going to have enough stuff within range 3 to do a double attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's fair. So, I mean, and all of them are roughly within range 3 because the Shrapnel Blast can only be on a small base range 3 away. But, you know, it's... I think you do have a good point, though, that, like, with Magneto, you really want to be within range 2 of an enemy to do reverse polarity. So, and because he's a short move, there is a little bit of a... You want to be using other things to get him up there. So do you want to talk about the cards that Magneto has?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. So Magneto has... Oops, looking in the wrong place, sorry. So Magneto has two cards that are character cards. They are unaffiliated, so you can use them... Wait, yeah, they're both unaffiliated, but one of them has... I'll read my favorite first. Magnetic Refraction. So it's unaffiliated, so you can use it in non-Brotherhood lists. But it says, Magneto may pay 2 to play this card. Magneto gains cover this round. Allied characters gain cover while within 3 of Magneto this round. So very cool. He's got a cover bubble. And then it has this other part that's really cool. If your squad is using the Brotherhood of Mutants affiliation, return this card to your available team tactics cards during the cleanup. This card may be played again this game. So every round, you could Magnetic Refraction and have Magneto under a cover bubble, and you get the card back. It's essentially an extra superpower that you can only use if he's in Brotherhood of Mutants, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool, yes.
His other card is Magnetic Crush, which is an attack card. It's one of those, you know, you get a new attack. So it's Magneto can spend 5, and then Magneto may use the attack listed once this activation. And it's a range 4, strength 6, 0 cost attack. And it says, when creating the dice pool for this attack, you can destroy any number of interactive terrain features of size 3 or less within 2 of the target character. So, say someone's in between a bunch of terrain, you can destroy it. If you do, you add dice to the attack roll equal to all the destroyed terrain features' sizes combined. And before damage is dealt, other enemy characters within 2 of that target character suffer 1. So, if your opponent is within 2 size 3 attacks, you can crush them and add 6 dice to the attack. And then it also damages people nearby. I think Magnetic Crush kind of falls under into the category of a lot of the other attack generating cards where it's cool and it's thematic, but I don't think it's good and it's pretty corner case.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think I'm going to use Magnetic Crush very often, especially because Magneto and like the team you build with Magneto is often going to destroy terrain a lot. So,
right.
It's okay. I just think it's another expensive attack on Magneto. And I do like how it's a range 4 attack, so that's pretty cool, because Magneto does feel like if you run away or you push Magneto enough, it might be a problem.
Let's maybe to wrap out our discussion of Magneto in this episode. Let's talk about some hot takes that I've been seeing with Magneto. Mm-hmm. And it basically is that he is a good, well-designed character, but just one of the kind of innate weaknesses for a six-point character is just it's a lot of eggs in one basket, and if your opponent's able to do things to control the battlefield or control him or to not have targets of opportunity for him to be able to attack or influence or whatever, mm-hmm. then he can suffer a little bit in that regard. And so it feels like the kind of the consensus I've seen with him is that him and maybe like the Brotherhood of Mutants are strong and good, but not necessarily like the very highest tier of the game. And so I'm curious, you've had more play experience with Magneto than me. What's your reaction, I guess, to that?
I think I agree. I think Magneto is good.
Yeah.
But I think he needs a little bit of support, and I think he does need a way to either speed Magneto up and bring him faster up the board, or he needs a way to kind of, like, I think Magneto, for example, in Gamma Shelters is very strong. But if Magneto doesn't get a scenario like that, where people are more clenched up and it's easier for him to get up, I think Magneto is pretty weak to, like, the spread out teams. And
that's one of the common things I've heard as well, is that it can somewhat be a little bit scenario dependent, where there's just some scenarios where he struggles a little bit more in comparison, or where just kind of the weakness of having that many points in one model when the board is spread out gets accentuated.
Yeah. And another thing I'm a little curious about is, so like Juggernaut is on the affiliation card, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, Juggernaut to me, I wonder how many points he's going to be. And if like, it's going to be, the idea is going to be like, you can make a list with Magneto and Juggernaut and have two high point models, or, so I'm curious about the future of Brotherhood. I do think he's also a very good Cabal member, which he's in the affiliation list, but mm-hmm. over there he fights with MODOK, and you know, we know that a lot of people prefer MODOK, as he's this incredibly long range turret, and that is the opposite of what Magneto is.
Right. Yeah.
But if you have Red Skull placing him every turn, that's pretty good.
That's true.
So it helps.
That's true. All right. Well, do you have any final thoughts on him before we close out this section and go on to our comic book?
Yeah, I have a general feeling with Magneto that he might end up being like bigger than I think he is, or than other people think he is. I'm really curious about how Brotherhood like develops, because I think we might start to see, like, with a few more releases, we might see Brotherhood become like one of the more competitive affiliations.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we need some more models. It's interesting because we have the two leaders, and so just once we see more Brotherhood stuff, I think we'll have a much better feel for whether or not Magneto is going to be this extreme powerhouse or not. But I think he's really good. I just think he has some draws that pull him down.
Okay, well, let's switch it up and let's start talking about our comic.
Oh, I'm so excited. Okay. So our comic is from 1982, and it is X-Men God Loves, Man Kills. So this is numbered as Marvel graphic novel number 5. So this was kind of this program Marvel had, where they started doing just original graphic novels. It was kind of at the time it was kind of a new idea. And they kind of thought that this would be the new way to distribute big stories. And so they were going into like looking into other markets and getting out of, you know, like newspaper stands, basically into bookstores almost. And like the very first one they made was Death of Captain Marvel, which was a huge Marvel event. And like a lot of them, I was looking at the list of them. A lot of them are really weird. Like they had the second one they did was a Michael Moorcock story that they adapted. They had a Neuromancer adaptation. It's just really out there ideas that they might not, but a lot of Marvel characters, a lot of Conan the Barbarians. So I think it's a really, like, I want to read all these now going back through them, but X-Men God Loves Man Kills, the reason I read this originally was because they used it as the core of X-Men 2, the Brett Ratner film. Bryan Singer, sorry, not Brett Ratner.
Yeah.
This is an 84-page story, and it's standalone, but it also like fits within the greater X-Men comics that were coming out at the time. And so it's written by Chris Claremont, who was the Marvel writer for X-Men for years. Like, he did all the X-Men stories. He created like the idea of the X-Men as like almost like a soap opera of human emotions. Like, that was kind of Chris Claremont's take. It's a big family. Like, they have all this like drama and all these like overlapping, you know, personalities that are struggling to fit together. That was kind of his thing. And so I feel like X-Men has been defined by that since then. But anyways, it starts with two children being chased and murdered because they are mutants, and they are killed by this like group called the Purifiers, and they're killed on a playground, and their bodies are hung in the swings, and Magneto finds them. And so the Magneto basically is in this comic presented as like the only one who can, you know, solve the problem that they're in, that the X-Men are coming through, which is that there is a reverend who is on TV and very well known and very, you know, very, he has a lot of attention. And this reverend has created this group of basically I think the best analogy is the KKK, where they are just completely for the elimination of mutants. There's a few points where, you know, they talk about how they're going to kill someone who's a mutie lover, and their ideals are spreading. I think the second scene is that Kitty Pryde gets in a fight with someone because they call her a mutie lover, and she attacks this person, and then the X-Men kind of have to like grab, like get her off of him. And so basically the Professor X and Stryker go on TV and they're having a debate about, you know, mutants. And like Stryker is just like, he is all fire and brimstone, and he is winning the debate almost against Professor X because he's fighting him from this, you know, he's not fighting him logically. He's fighting him like, well, my feelings are this, and, you know, God is telling me that you're abominations. So after the debate, the Purifiers attack Professor X, Cyclops, and Storm, and stage it to look like they've been killed in the car crash. In reality, they have kidnapped Professor X to basically torture him telepathically until he will work for Stryker. The X-Men realize that it's been faked. And then Magneto basically steps in as the leader to find out where Professor X is and save him and stop William Stryker. And there's some pretty interesting scenes where like Magneto tortures some Purifiers to get information out of them. And it kind of presents this idea that like Magneto is the one who's willing to go far enough to get what they need. And I feel like he's almost compared to Wolverine in those scenes. And so Magneto and the X-Men end up finding where they are at a revival, right? Where there's a huge crowd in an auditorium, and the Magneto and the X-Men, they go in and they rescue Professor X, but Professor X has seemingly killed Cyclops and Storm after being tortured mentally until he accepts Stryker's leadership. And so they find Cyclops and Storm's corpses, and it's revealed that, oh no, they're just barely alive because Professor X is still like just barely fighting back. But it's basically from X-Men 2, the scene where Professor X is like killing all the mutants in the world. That's where they get him to. And so Professor X is sending out all this psychic energy, and mutants are like screaming in pain, and they end up saving Professor Xavier. And then Cyclops, it's pretty cool because there's like this moment where they're like, okay, we've saved everybody, let's leave. And Cyclops says something along the lines of like, we need to visibly and publicly confront Stryker and prove how wrong he is, because his ideas are what's dangerous about him, not his, you know, his cultists and like him himself. And like, we need to show that Stryker is wrong publicly. And so they confront him on stage, and they basically trick him or bait him into admitting that, you know, he wants to eliminate all mutants, and that he's kidnapped Professor Xavier and tortured him. And then he basically gets to this point. So Stryker is obviously in the wrong here, and he ends up pulling a gun on the X-Men. And so he's threatening to shoot them, and they just stand there. They are not going to fight him. I really love the panel where it shows Stryker pointing the gun, and they're all standing still, just staring him down. And so he's going to shoot Shadowcat, and before he does that, a security guard or a cop, I don't know which, shoots Stryker to stop him, saying, you know, he was going to shoot a 15-year-old girl. And then Stryker is arrested for his crimes, and it looks like people are realizing, okay, this is, Stryker was wrong. He's evil. He's crazy. But it's interesting because at the end, it kind of shows that Professor X is maybe considering that Magneto is right, that, you know, you can't fight these kinds of things. Cyclops steps in again as kind of the, hey, like, for every person like Stryker, there's people like the security guard who will defend, you know, innocence. And Magneto's kind of...
Real quick, I just have to interject. I do love that, like, for whatever reason, Cyclops is the character that everyone loves to hate. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was amazing that he was the one who had the... moral clarity at the end of this story.
It's interesting. It's interesting that I mean, you're right. That's the general view on Cyclops. In the comics, he vacillates a lot. The comics with Cyclops that I like, he's either the tactical leader who's like leading everybody because he knows how to do it, or he replaces Xavier sometimes.
Right.
Xavier has like consciousness, he has like he struggles with his ideals of integration, and there's a lot of times where like Cyclops is the one who carries the burden without Professor Xavier, and there's a lot of comic writers who've kind of tried to make Cyclops the new Professor X, where like he's the one who believes in this and he's the one who's gonna lead everybody to the future, but also later Cyclops kills Professor X at one point, so like it's there's a lot of like back and forth with X-Men with different writers. But I mean, I like that by the end of this story we're left with the, is Magneto right or is Professor X right? And Professor X does kind of, like, he wants Magneto to join the X-Men, and Magneto leaves, and kind of, we're left with this, like, is Stryker gonna win? Like, are his supporters going to keep going, or are they not? And I really like how it ends. I think it's a really solid, like, self-contained story. And if you've seen X-Men 2, William Stryker is, like, a military scientist and not a minister, but, like, the overarching idea is the same. Even, like, Stryker in the comics, the reason he's so crazy against mutants is that his wife gave birth to a mutant baby, and he killed both of them and tried to kill himself in, like, a car explosion, but it just threw him away, you know, miraculously. And in the movie, right, he has a mutant son that he uses to mind control Professor X. So it's pretty similar. Pretty interesting.
Okay, well, we're going to pause there and continue this discussion in the bonus episode. So please feel free to subscribe, or if you're already subscribing, that's great. And you'll be able to hear more about this comic, and also more thoughts on Magneto. Greg, are we going to need to ask people to check social media on our next comic book, or have you decided? I'm kind of just throwing this at you.
No. Although... I already chose it, Jay. Just give me a moment. I'm sorry. All right. Sorry about that.
No problem. We're waiting with bated breath.
So, we're going to continue with the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, and we're going to read a Mystique story.
The Brotherhood of Misunderstood Mutants.
That is not the name they chose for themselves. So, excuse me. So, but we're going to read a Mystique story. It is Uncanny X-Men from 1963. Issues 141 and 142. It's just two issues.
Okay. 1960s comics. This is going to be an adventure.
It is not from 1960s. It's that it started in 1960s.
Oh, okay. What episode number or comic note issue is it again?
141 and 142.
Okay, so it's probably 70s then?
I believe it's the 80s, but...
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
You better.
Okay.
This is another, like, classic X-Men story that has influenced the movies. It's from 1981. Nice. So it's okay. Like a year earlier than God Loves, Man Kills.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and pause there, and thank you everyone for listening, and thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Jay.